think you're what they say you are. Ricky Lee, superstar. Do you think you're what they say you are?
It's showtime with Ricky Lee. Thank you for joining me here on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio, with streaming and podcasts available at huntleyradio.com. Shakespeare and other classic plays are always a treat when done well. During this COVID-19 pandemic that we are still in, theaters have been dark. However, innovative, creative people have been turning to alternative ways to participate in the arts. One such very talented artist is writer and director Thomas Newman, who has launched Classic Zoom Works, which features virtual readings of classic plays. Today, Thomas joins me to talk about Classic Zoom Works and how you can watch these virtual performances. Welcome to the show, Thomas.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, prior to the pandemic, you were working as a theatrical director, including an Elgin Theater Company, Fremont Street Theater co-production of Hamlet, for which you did the script adaptation as well. Have you always had a connection to Shakespeare and the classics?
I honestly have. I think it's just, it's timeless theater, because I think that there's a lot of new theater coming out that's very different and unique, but this stuff just, every time you read it, you find something different, you learn something different, and there's always some new theory about some character in Shakespeare or a classic that then changes how you read the show. So every time you're like, oh great, I have to reread it again, but with this academic theory interpreted into the reading. So it's like, I loathe seeing new Shakespeare theories, but then I'm also like, oh, I guess I have to read it again.
Very good. Now, what was it that initially sparked your interest in the classics?
Honestly, I just had great teachers in high school who taught Shakespeare really well, because I think with Shakespeare in high school, it can really be a hit or a miss for a lot of people, because I've always found when I talk with people, that's where they either grew to love Shakespeare or kind of stray away from it. But I had great teachers who really knew how to break down Shakespeare well, and it was just like, oh, this stuff is interesting, I will look into it more. And then I kind of didn't stop.
Now, of course, your directing talents aren't limited to Shakespeare. You also directed an excellent production of A Christmas Carol for Theater 121. Again, you did the script adaptation. As a director, are you somebody who always likes to tinker with the script?
I think kind of, because it actually, I think, helps me more figure out characters, because, you know, there are times when I've been stage managing shows and you see actors reading scripts that other people have written, and it's like, well, you can't change that line. You need to figure out why you're saying that line, and if it doesn't necessarily gel with the interpretation the actor has of that character, then it's like, oh, great, rework your interpretation of the entire character you've been performing for the past 2 months. But with this, it's like, oh, you seem uncomfortable with that line. Would you want to, like, change a couple words and make it more, you know, this or that? And then it really just, you know, it's a unique thing to be able to have an actor say, hey, what if I said this, and you can actually say, yes, you can, instead of, the contract specifically states that we cannot change a single word in the script. I'm sorry.
Is that part of the appeal of the classics, that you have that freedom?
Oh, definitely. 100%. I think it's fun to play with them respectfully and just kind of do new, unique things with them that you can't do with other works.
So where did the concept for Classic Zoom Works come from?
Well, I, through about 6-7 months of the pandemic at the beginning, I was doing a bunch of just small readings with friends and everything. And then one of my friends said, hey, I'm doing a reading of Midsummer with some friends. Want to do it? And being that Puck is my Shakespearean dream role, I was like, yes, I will do that. And then a few months later, she was like, hey, we're doing King Lear. Do you want to be Edgar? And I said, yeah. And then halfway through King Lear, I was like, gosh, I'd really love to just do a reading series of Shakespeare. And then within 5 minutes, I was just like, okay, I'm going to do it. And then through the process of doing all Shakespeare, I was looking at other classic scripts, and I'm like, oh, I love a good Ibsen. I love a good Greek. I love a good anything. So I was just like, well, I guess we'll just do classics.
Now, you do all the script adaptations, is that correct?
Yes.
How long does it take to adapt a script for classic ZoomWorks?
Rather short, just because a lot of it I don't touch anything. I think the most I did was when we did Taming of the Shrew, there's this 20-minute prologue sequence that no one ever does, and it's kind of like doesn't even go with the show. It's just some odd little bar scene that I was just like, okay, we can cut it. But usually we stick wholeheartedly to the original text, which can make for very long shows, but we're kind of doing this for semi-academic purposes where it's like, hi, here's the entire text. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about it.
And now, how long do the Zoom performances tend to run? You said they can run a little bit long.
Yes. The usual, I'd say, is around like 220, 230, like a typical show. But mm-hmm. then once you get into the Richard III, Coriolanus, it gets into 3 hours, 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. Hamlet's the one that we're literally going to have to break it into two parts.
Wow.
It's like, no, we're doing that over 2 days because we are not going to have a 4.5 hour Zoom reading.
Right, right. And now, what was your first foray into the virtual world of classic Zoom works?
The first one we did was Romeo and Juliet.
And why did you pick that one?
That was because that is the Shakespeare I've talked with the most people about wanting to do. It's like I had a bunch of people who were like, oh, if you ever do that, I'd love to be this. I'd love to be that. I'd love to be this. So I knew that that one would, I had enough people who I could say, hey, I'm doing this. You said you wanted to do it with me. Now do it with me. So then it kind of, I picked certain ones that I knew would really get people to start joining in. So we did Romeo and Juliet, Richard III, Julius Caesar. So three like really big, well-known, exciting ones with a lot of roles that people dream about playing. And then you can kind of get into the more, huh, I've never read Cymbeline. Maybe I'll try that out. So we really started with like three heavy hitters that could really get people into it.
And what did you learn from those projects that maybe helped you in creating further projects?
Well, I think that we've kind of gone through a lot of iterations in a way because it started with, okay, bigger casts with people having fewer parts but sometimes not saying as much. And then it just we've been sort of shrinking, not shrinking the cast, but more making sure that everyone has enough that makes it enjoyable for everyone, because sometimes it can be like, oh, this Shakespeare character comes on stage for 2 minutes and then is beheaded and never seen again.
And for 3 hours.
for another 3 hours. So I think it's been, that was the main thing that I kind of started to really be like, okay, how can I get people to have the most enjoyment out of this instead of just sitting and staring at a screen after they've been killed off in the first 5 minutes?
Now, you've done some interesting adaptations, including some gender-switching productions,
yes,
if I remember correctly. And now, what was the Shakespearean show that you did the gender switch with?
That was Taming of the Shrew.
And where did the idea come from to do that?
That was actually, the Royal Shakespeare Company did a version of that in, I want to say, 2016 to 2018, and I watched it. It's my favorite Shakespeare adaptation. I finished it and said, it's canon that you have to gender swap it, because it was unique, it was interesting, and it was thoroughly enjoyable. And for a show like Taming of the Shrew that can really be difficult to do, it doesn't necessarily change the sexist tones, but it almost makes it a unique look at that, where certain things, once we finished, someone was like, thank you for changing the genders, because if a man was saying those things to a woman, that would be horrible and disgusting. And it's like, yeah, And I just, it was one of those things where I was like, yeah, let's do this, because it was fun. And I was actually, I have another adaptation of Taming of the Shrew that I kind of fiddled around with that I eventually want to do for Elgin Fringe Festival once the pandemic is over and we can. So it was kind of like I was testing out certain things to kind of be like, ooh, does this work? Does that work?
You're listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee on 101.5 Huntley Community Radio, with streaming and podcasts available at huntleyradio.com. Today, I'm joined by uber-talented director and playwright Thomas Newman. We are discussing classic Zoom Works, which presents Zoom readings of Shakespeare and other classic plays. Thomas, if people want to check out the current collection of Zoom readings, where would they go on the web?
So on Facebook, we are Classic Zoom Works, and then you just join the group, and the backlog is on the Facebook page under videos, and you can just watch. I think we're up to 26 Shakespeare, 3 Greek, and 1 Ibsen.
Wow.
And we're not stopping anytime soon. I think we have 6 new ones that we're scheduling, and then Shakespeare all the way up to mid-May.
Now, we talked a little bit about changing genders for Taming of the Shrew. Does changing genders, do you have any other twists that you've incorporated into adaptations besides just the gender twist?
Yes. We actually did, when we did Midsummer, we had all the lovers as women.
Oh.
So we've kind of played with gender, with the sexuality of certain characters, and it's been unique because there are certain characters of Shakespeare that are canonically thought of as gay or LGBTQ. So it's been interesting to actually play those characters as such openly instead of the, like, fly-coded stuff that Shakespeare wrote in there that you're like, I'm thinking this. And it's like, yeah, Shakespeare meant that. So it's been very fun to actually explore that side of the characters as well.
That's pretty cool. I like that. Now, of all the classics you've adapted and directed, which is the one that you are most proud of?
Why did you ask that? It's Sophie's choice, but Shakespeare's choice. It's difficult because we always say, it was like when we did Midsummer, we were like, oh, this is the best one. Then we did Macbeth, and that was the best one. And then yesterday we did A Doll's House, and that was the best one. So I think it also goes to the fact that with the group of people we've had, we've been doing this for so long that now we're building these connections and building this rapport and building these relationships that it's as if we've been rehearsing for one show for a year, and all these relationships are just getting heavier and heavier, so we can really, like, pull from things and go at it with each other and feel comfortable doing it in a way that, you know, if you've been working with someone for 2 weeks, you don't want to be screaming in their face
right
when you barely know them. But with this, it's like, oh, no, I'm going to scream at you until I make you cry because I know you can handle it.
Now, where do you find the actors for your Zoom productions?
So it started off with just a bunch of people from Woodstock and people I had worked with there, and then through it, people just started getting added. I also do stuff with Kevin Pollak, Zooming the Movies, and some people started coming over from there, and then it just basically, if you know someone who wants to do it, do a show, add them, and I just post and say, hey, we're doing this show. Who wants in? And then if you say you want in, I will see if I can find a spot for you.
And to get involved, people would just Google, go to Facebook and search for Classic Zoom Works and join the group, correct?
Yeah.
Now, performing on Zoom is very different than any other medium. What makes for a good Zoom performance?
I think one thing that we've started to do is I love a good Zoom background that really just pulls it all together. So, you know, for Macbeth, we did about, like, four different backgrounds, and it gives you a theatrical experience as much as you possibly can, instead of, oh, I'm in a person's bedroom as mm-hmm. they're talking about being on the moors of Scotland. But if you can have a moor of Scotland, it gives you that extra little oomph that I think is really the only thing missing from Zoom, because partially I like it a bit more just because you can actually see faces up close and see the emotion instead of, ooh, was that an eyebrow raise? Was mm-hmm. that a, huh? So with Zoom, you can really get the full range of emotion from the performers.
And do you use costumes and props?
Sometimes, yes. It really depends, I think, on the person, which I think is what a lot of people love about this stuff, is that, you know, if you want to just come read Shakespeare. If you want to, you know, go full out and go insane, you can. We did the Theban cycle with Oedipus Rex, Oedipus at Colonius, and Antigone, and I will just say, I did not hold back in the first Oedipus when Oedipus gouged his eyes out.
Yep.
Someone was like, yeah, I did not look. I was done with my lines. I was glad. I shrunk the video and waited until it was over. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but blame the Greeks.
Now, with these Zoom adaptations, do you have the opportunity to rehearse ahead of time, or do you just give your directions ahead of time and trust your actors?
I just trust the actors, because most, if not all, of the people who do this are just great performers, where it's kind of like, oh, wow, you're really good. So it's really just, I send the script out about, it varies from like a month to a couple weeks before, and then it's just like, okay, in your own time, look through it, go through it, and just come and have at it. So I think it really takes away a lot of the pressure of rehearsals and performances, and while it still is a performance, it's fun for everyone involved.
Now, some of the upcoming productions for Classic Zoom Works include As You Like It on April 25th, Pericles on May 2nd, King Lear on May 8th, and The Winter's Tale on May 16th. Let's start with As You Like It. For those not familiar with this play, can you give us a synopsis of the story?
So, As You Like It is, I jokingly call it the other one about the forest, because, you know, you have Midsummer, which is that iconic classic forest one, and then As You Like It kind of has gender swapping involved in that, too, because it's basically Rosalind's father is a banished duke, and then through some drama, Rosalind is banished with her best friend Celia, and then they disguise themselves as women, and the guy who is in love with Rosalind, Orlando, is in the forest trying to find Rosalind, and then he meets Rosalind as a boy, who then helps Orlando seduce Rosalind, who he doesn't know is helping him seduce herself. And it's just kind of this, like, really funny gender swap madcapness that... It's just every time I'm like, oh, we're doing that one. It's got like those great awkward Shakespeare seduction scenes that mm-hmm. are hilarious, and it just goes off from there.
Now, what was the adaptation process like for As You Like It?
So really, a lot of these I read, and As You Like It was one of the last ones that I read, and basically it's just... I go through it and size out the cast, because I think that is the most challenging thing with all Shakespeare, is that Will loved to write a good two-line character. So it's always like, okay, how many can I double up on without having an entire scene where people talk to themselves? Because then it's like, okay, you can be these five characters, and it really just is like an origami cast of making sure everyone has enough, and no one's talking to themselves, and you have enough time if you need to do something to do that. And so a lot of it, it's not so much adaptation as making sure people can do it.
And do you have any twists that you slipped into this one that we should be on the lookout for?
Not so much in this one, just because I think this is one that isn't done as often, so for the ones that aren't usually done, I tried to keep it kind of as, air quote, traditional as possible.
Mm-hmm.
But with the ones that are more popularly done, I want to mess about with it just to be like, hi, this is a unique version of this. Let's look at it in a different light.
Now, what is your favorite part of the adaptation process?
Honestly, it's the reading part. It's like every time, it's always, I'm looking through the script and I'm just like, oh, I can't wait for that line. Oh, I can't wait for that line. Oh, and then there's this. Oh, and then that scene. Oh, and then this. It gets quite distracting because I want to sit there and read it, but I can't allow myself to, or I would just read the script and never cast it because there's so much that I love about it.
Now, what is the hardest part about the adaptation process?
I think shrinking down the cast.
Mm-hmm.
It is a lot of work, just because you have to go through each scene. How many people are in the scene? Who's in the scene? Do they interact with someone in a later scene that they can't play that same character? And if they do have a scene with that character, is that character talking too? So it's really just like, wait, who's talking, who's not, who's in the scene? Because certain scenes in Shakespeare literally have 20 people on stage and only 3 people talk. So it's like, okay, which one's talking? Which one's talking? Hold on, which one's talking? I don't care about you guys standing in the background. And then you kind of have to just fold all the characters together.
Okay. Now, whether it's Zoom or live, what is your general approach to a piece from the director's perspective?
I think a lot of it is starting with the text. I'm a OCD classical person in the fact that the text does give you most of what you need. So it's really, okay, let's break this down. Let's look at this. Let's think about the time period that this was not only written in, but that is the time period of the performance. How does it differ? How does it change? What does the context of this line mean in that time period, not ours? So a lot of it is just starting from the ground floor and just working up until you get the skyscraper that is your performance at opening night.
Now, it's been said that 90% of a good director's job is casting. What qualities do you consider when you are casting?
I love an actor who is confident in themselves, because I think that, especially when looking at the classics, if you, as a director, were to break down every single line and every single word, you'd be rehearsing for a year. So I think that it's always great to see an actor with confidence. Whether or not their ideas of certain things match yours, it's great to be able to say, hey, I love that you're taking initiative. Let's work through it this way and see how we can meld both of our visions and really just have someone who's not afraid of that work and constructive criticism around what they're doing.
Now, with classic Zoom works, you have really made Shakespeare and other classic playwrights accessible. What are the keys to performing Shakespeare properly?
I think making sure the performers understand what they're saying, because if you as the speaker of the work understand it, it comes across far better to the audience with how you're saying things and how you're emoting, because a lot of his words are not our words, but the feeling behind it, the energy behind it, the way you're moving with those words. It's like, oh, that's an insult. Ooh, that wasn't nice. Like, it kind of, the emotion and the understanding of the performers kind of then washes into the audience and helps them better understand it.
And why shouldn't actors be intimidated by Shakespeare?
I think, and this could just me being the know-it-all I am, but it's really easy because the blocking's all in it. It's like, how dare ye bite your thumb at me? Oh, I should have bit my thumb at them. Cross not towards me, good sir. Oh, I'm crossing towards him. So a lot of it is like, Shakespeare blocks his own shows. He gives you the prop list in the scripts, and it's really just, his scripts are like a textbook for a performer, where it's like, oh, I know my entire character arc, I know my entire backstory because I monologue about it for 20 minutes in Act 1, Scene 3, and it just, it's a great way to stretch your vocal muscles as well.
You've been listening to It's Showtime with Ricky Lee. My guest today has been Thomas Newman, one of the premier young theatrical directors in the area. Thomas's brainchild, Classic Zoom Works, presents virtual readings of Shakespeare and other classic plays. To see these readings in action, search Classic Zoom Works on Facebook. Thomas, I am a huge fan of your directing and adaptations. I hope you will come back on the show to keep us informed of various projects in the future.
I definitely will. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. You have a great day.